talent goes nowhere unless it's harnessed and nurtured in the right way. And so that is the training part of it, the mindset training, the nutritional discipline, the sleep regime. Developing all of that is part of the integral ingredients to becoming a champion.
Welcome to Forever Young, the health and well-being podcast from Lanzerhof. My name is Mario Pedizzoli, and in every episode, join me in conversation with a variety of health experts and special guests as we explore what it means to live well. We may not find the secret to eternal youth, but join me on our quest as we explore just what it means to live a balanced, healthy, and happy life. Hello again and welcome. Well, today's podcast is yet another special one. Our guest today is a former GB athlete who won a dramatic gold and the nation's hearts at the Sydney Olympics in 2000. My guest's distinguished career in track and field athletics also includes being a two-time Commonwealth Games champion, the 1998 European champion, and who won silver medals in the 97 and 99 World Championships. Her achievements, culminating in Olympic gold in Sydney, led to her being honoured with an OBE in the 2000 New Year's Honours List. And after retiring from athletics in 2005, she was then inducted into the UK Athletics Hall of Fame. Well, not one to sit still, since retiring from athletics, she has undertaken various television and media work and is now a regular athletics pundit for BBC Television, including Olympic coverage in London 2012, Rio 2016, and this year's Olympics in Tokyo. And, well, if that's not enough, she's a mother of four, and she can also dance, making it to the final of the second ever series of Strictly. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Denise Lewis. Denise, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm spot on with all the facts. I love it.
Well, it didn't take too long. There's a lot about you out there, Denise. So, but you do sound like a bit of a Wonder Woman. How are you today? How are you feeling today?
Ordinarily, I'm feeling great, but I'm a bit nasally, so I've sort of adopted these sort of dulcet tones, which aren't my normal sound, but I'm hoping it's going to sound fine for your podcast, which I'm really looking forward to being part of. But I'm great. Sun's shining, all is well.
It's a beautiful day. How are you dealing with your cold? Any particular regimes to help you combat that?
Yeah, I'm a bit of I love the old remedies, you know, things like turmeric root. So I've been grating. My fingernails are bright yellow at the moment because I've been grating turmeric root, baking that golden milk, which is supposed to be really good for you for when you've got a cold. Oat milk, turmeric, what else goes in there? Cinnamon. I put a little bit of nutmeg in as well. Mix it all up, a little potion. I've always got some ginger in the house and garlic, so I crush that up and try and sweat it out.
Well, this is a health and well-being podcast, so that's a good start. Thanks for sharing those secrets. Well, look, it's a podcast, so our listeners cannot see us talking on Zoom, which we are right now. But I have to say, you look so incredibly well and fit. And we have to say 21 years after you won Olympic gold. So come on, for our podcast needs, share your secrets, please. How are you managing to look so well?
When you say that, 21 years, it's just incredible. But I think with purpose, I look this way because I mindfully and purposefully said, I have to honour my body. As a woman, you know that there's certain life milestones that you're not going to be able to avoid, and that's the dreaded M word, menopause, which seems to be, and gratefully, a really hot topic these days. But you know that you're on this train and this destination that you want to stay on the train as long as possible. So you have to be consciously making an effort to keep well. And obviously my life in sport has given me sort of a few rungs up the ladder. So I already come with a great engine, I think.
Mm. And mindset, presumably.
And absolutely mindset. But, you know, life as an athlete was easy because you can be selfishly indulging in your health and well-being, your fitness for its purposeful, it's your job. But when you move away from the sport, it is about trying to recreate a habit that you can sustain.
Mm.
And I think I was really good up to my second child. And then I thought, oh, retired, I'm loving life, found the wine, found, you know, that food tastes so much better when you add a big slab of butter to it. And yeah, I sort of lost my way for a few years, but I rekindled that because, as you just alluded to, I have a really good mindset and I know it's not the way to live. And I feel better about myself when I'm sort of, I call it eating cleanly, but I just like to have the natural taste of food. Mm. I'm not a big sauce intaker. Mm. I just like to have really good food, so fresh salmon, fish. And I have to say, I've got better at my exercise regime in the last few years. I've always been good, but I've got really consciously better over the last few years. Mm. And maybe that's because, you know, turning 40, being pregnant and having a baby, fourth baby at 46, you know, you've just got to focus and be really consistent about what you're doing. And that's, I think, for me, the key. It's consistency.
Consistency and a routine, maybe. And I think probably athletics or life in elite sport prepares you for routine, or that maybe never leaves you.
Well, it did leave me for a little bit, but it doesn't really. I can access that brain very quickly if I need to. And that's with anything in my life. When things are going a little bit pear-shaped or not the way I'd envisaged, I can put that reset button back on and think about how I can make that change effectively for myself and for my family. Mm. So, yeah, it is the consistency and it is that routine that I think we all craved, didn't we, during lockdown? I mean, it was finding those new routines that just kept you going.
Yes, when it goes out of the window like that, well, it can go one of two ways, can't it? You have to find your new routine, your new normal. So, look, there's lots to talk about today. So let's see where this chat takes us. We've established you look like you could compete tomorrow. So, and I think that's down to the discipline that you're instilling in yourself again. So that's great to hear. But how were you back in the day? How were you discovered and how was your raw talent nurtured?
I think I felt like just an ordinary kid that just loved to run. And when I got found my why, which was the Olympics, you know, I took myself with my mom. I took my mom to take me to my track, the local track in the Midlands in Wolverhampton. And it was snowballed from there, really. I was spotted by a more senior coach who thought, there's something a bit different about this one. So I want to pursue that. And he invited me to join another club, be part of a bigger, more elite group. And, you know, that early sort of recognition of my talent really helped me. It kept me focused. And I loved the challenge of just finding out what my body could do. So it was no miracles. It was sort of, I'd like to think textbook, how it should be, that someone who has a trained eye recognizes talent and that talent finds the way. But I think there is a little bit of luck involved in that because it wasn't an easy commute for me, being schooled and living in Wolverhampton, having to make that journey across to Birmingham, which my mom didn't drive at the time.
Mm.
And so I had to take school bus into town, into the town centre, then a train, then another bus to Perry Barr in Birmingham. And so that was like an hour and a half trip. And then I had to do it all the way back again in the evening. So it was challenging. But it told me a lot about myself with hindsight looking back that I had the dedication and I had the commitment very early. And those are the signs that you look for.
So having to overcome an hour and a half commute there and back, you know, it does take dedication, as you say, but it makes you wonder how much raw talent there is out there that we don't tap into and we don't see the fruits of that elite coaching that you clearly benefited from as well.
Very much so. I think we've seen a bit of a breakdown in that sort of school liaison person, that school support partnerships that used to be so effective, sort of not in my area, but later. So the last sort of 20 years, we had a really good setup with Youth Sports Trust where, you know, talent was easily identified from the schools to the clubs. And the parents are involved in that setup as well, that sort of triangle. But I do think parents are a lot more cautious about sending their children across towns or cities in order to do their sport. If you can't physically mobilize them yourself, do you entrust that your child is going to get to that destination safely and it's going to be a safe space for him or her to work out in? And I think those are some of the challenges and obstacles to why some of the raw talent isn't getting spotted these days. So that's why I was really grateful. Sorry to cut you off there. That's why I was really grateful about my mom. Although she raised me on her own, we had that sort of implicit trust that she knew that it was my passion. And she, although she didn't really know what to do with a daughter who everyone kept telling her was very special, different and talented, she didn't really know what to do. So she had to trust that I would go to the destination because that was my driver. And I'm very grateful that she did have that trust in me.
Well, I'm sure when you were awarded that OBE, the first person you thought of was your mum, I imagine, listening to all of that.
Yeah, she's been with me at all the big championships. She travelled with me. She came to the palace when I was awarded my OBE with my grandmother, my late grandmother. And it was a very special moment. It was, I saw them both with their hats on, their gloves. I mean, they went to town, as you do when you're back to meet Queenie. And it was a real occasion and a moment to be very grateful and thankful that I could share that moment with them.
And of course, it was years in the making, as you've just alluded to, since from being a little girl to 2000 and on the podium. That in itself is the entire journey to get to that moment. Maybe give us an insight into the training and preparation needed to compete. Well, not just compete, but win at the highest level.
But it's for me, I think it was a shift in the mindset. You know, I won my first international global title with Commonwealth Games in 1994, and it was a big surprise for me. I went into those championships thinking I just want to show what I can do. You know, I was turning 21, and at that point you're thinking, when's it going to happen for me? And so winning that title really was like a rocket fuel for me. It's like, actually, you can be really good if you change your mindset and your application to the training. So it was, instead of just rocking up to the training sessions and doing what I was doing, I did it with purpose and consideration and knowing that I was closer to being what I wanted to be, which is the best in the world. So it is that adjustment that you have to make to your training regime. I upped the ante, if you like, and started to engage the mind much more in my training and not just for competition.
And were you, did you know you had to put in the hard work, you know, in a cold night in Birmingham in the pouring rain in winter? Were you able to switch into that mindset, say, this is what I need to be doing?
I got better, let's put it that way.
Would your coach agree?
Just in case any of the coaches ever listen to this, they'll be like, was this the same girl that used to complain that it was raining and she just like, oh my goodness, do I have to go out? I remember clearing snow off the track many times in Birmingham just to provide a lane for myself. So I know that it was in me, but it took a little while to understand it was that sort of attitude, come rain, come shine, come any setbacks, that you need to shift your mind in order to overcome any hurdles. And so, as I said, I got better. I became a better athlete training than I was just a competitor, because I was a natural competitor. That was, if you like, that was my raw talent. But talent goes nowhere unless it's harnessed and nurtured in the right way. And so that is the training part of it, the mindset training, the nutritional discipline, the sleep regime. Developing all of that is part of the integral ingredients to becoming a champion.
Mm.
Who are your role models? You've reminded me of Daley Thompson, who said he used to make sure he trained on Christmas Day. And I was a little boy then myself. I was so impressed with that. Was he a role model of yours, and who else inspired you?
Yeah, I love Daley, still do today. It's that sort of mindset. And I didn't train on Christmas Day, by the way. I was thinking, there's got to be another way to get to this gold medal, you know. Daley, I really admired Seb Coe as well. But for me, I think sometimes it's the local heroes that those tangible ones that you can see on the track week in, week out that make a difference. They did to me anyway. So, you know, both my early experiences of being an athlete and learning the track discipline and the etiquette, and being able to see GB internationals training in the same facility. I had Tessa Sanderson. She was from Wolverhampton, homegrown, became Olympic champion in the javelin in 84. I saw her, another athlete that some people might not know, called Sonia Nanneman, but she was one of the youngest sprinters in that competed for the BOA, British Olympic team. And I saw her weekly. And so they look like me, would have been to the same sort of schools as me. And so I believed it was possible. There was a chance. And so it's not just the role models you see on the television, but there are key individuals throughout your life that continue to inspire and give those valuable sort of nuggets and signposts to say, I'm on the right pathway.
You really evoke an era, a golden era of athletics, which we can all feel nostalgic about. But having said all of that, you yourself clearly have been a role model for the future, the next generations. Jess Ennis Hill obviously is an obvious example, Katarina Johnson Thompson, and who knows, that's just in your sport, the heptathlon. But were you aware of the time? Did you hope that your achievements, did you look beyond yourself and realise that this could open floodgates or the door?
No, not at all. It was, you know, you kind of head down, grafting, trying not to make too many mistakes, understanding your own emotions to really understand the impact that you're having on other people's lives. So I've since become very good friends with Ebony Jewel Rainford-Brent, who is one of the commentators for cricket. World Cup winner in 2009, and also Maggie Alfonsi, who was also a World Cup winner for rugby, women's rugby. And they talk about the inspiration that seeing me on television gave them to be consistent and believe they could actually achieve in their own sports. Very different sports, both team sports, but those women in particular were just like, wow. It blew me away to see you and kept me focused. And so that's amazing for me. You know, if you can inspire just one person to be better and to believe, I think that's, you know, that's a good job, a good innings for yourself and oneself.
And you're giving back to the sport through your punditry and commentary through the BBC. And it's always a great listen to for people such as yourself and Colin Jackson, including Michael Johnson as well, that really understand what's going on there. So it's almost a privileged insight into the sport. But how do you see the state of UK athletics today? It maybe is not quite as high profile. We're maybe, with exceptions of Dean Asher-Smith and one or two notable others, is the future generation coming through? Is the infrastructure there? Are you worried about your sport? Let's have a chat about that.
I'm going to take a deep breath now, mindfulness.
Yes.
Because if anyone has been following the sport recently, you've seen there's been a lot of headwind facing the sport on so many levels. We've just lost our CEO, our performance director, we're in a bit of a strange position, and it's not a good one. And that gives me great concerns. Yes, the talent is there, but you also, like you find in your own lives, you know, you don't bring out the best in yourself if the working environment is hostile, if it's not conducive to performance. And that's where I feel UK athletics is at the moment. And we need to turn that juggernaut and rapidly, because, you know, the Olympics are 3 years away. There's Commonwealth Games next year, World Championships, European Championships, three major events for track and field. And I don't know, the athletes I know, because I do speak to them, are not happy. I'm not happy. And I'm not saying that's going to massively affect performance, but it will. It's not bringing out the best of the athletes. And so things need to change, and we need a rapid plan of action for, you know, damage limitation. I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the answers, but, you know, I know that good relationships start with good communication. And there's been a breakdown of communication, and it's been eroded year after year because no one has had the courage to really roll their sleeves up and get down and dirty and sort out some of the fundamentals, whether that's coaching, the communication between coach and athlete, governing bodies, which are inherently supposed to be the enemy for a lot of people. But we need to bridge that and make it a bit more unified and understand the bigger picture, because it's not just about what happens in athletics. It's also athletic standing against the other sports out there, which are growing rapidly and changing and evolving and getting a lot of traction.
I think you're absolutely right with that point. I think, you know, we look at Premier League football, which seems to have taken over the world in terms of sport consumption on TV. Athletics is slowly disappearing from terrestrial TV, and these are worrying times for the sport. I think you should throw your hat in the ring, Denise, and run UK Athletics. Have you ever thought of that?
I have delusions of grandeur every now and again. I just don't know whether I'm best equipped, but I love that sport. It's got so much for it. If there's one sport that says, whatever your body shape is, ability, there's an event for you. You can find an event for you. And that's got to be a good message for our young people. I think it's exciting. It's dynamic. Yes, you have the likes of Bolt in the past that, you know, the whole world gravitated to. But you have a fantastic race where all eight lanes, it's nip and tuck, and you can't predict what's going to happen. It's equally as exciting. So
yes,
I'm there. Listen, I care about that sport. You know, it's in my heart. I would absolutely love an opportunity to try and bridge some of those and do some of that repair damage if possible.
Oh, well, UK Athletics, if you're listening, you heard it here first. But you're absolutely right. As a sport, it's one of the most accessible sports for young people of all. You know, nothing could be simpler than running in a straight line as quickly as possible, and all the other events, of course, that go with that. That said, do schools gear up? You mentioned this earlier, and do you feel we have the infrastructure there to identify our next talent? And then do we have the elite coaching in place around the whole country? It's a big ask. And again, it comes back to leadership of UK Athletics, but are you excited about the future or worried?
Oh, I'm a bit worried at the moment. I have to confess, I'm a bit concerned. It's just been negative press after negative press. And that, as I said, it's not good for morale. Why would you, as a young person, choose athletics, or your parents even want to pursue, you know, a sport that seems to not be able to govern itself very well? You know, it's a huge time commitment for both parties, child and parent. And you have to work very hard in athletics to gain some momentum. So that does concern me. So it has to look like it's fun. It has to look like there are opportunities. And I think one of the key words that you said is elite coaching. We need to look at the coaching issues that have been bubbling under the surface for a long time. But the fractures are there now, and it's apparent for everyone to see.
Mm.
Feels like it's at a crossroads, but we wish it well. And now, you're a mum of four. We talked about that. And yet you keep yourself incredibly fit. Are your children showing any interest? What do they think of mum and her achievements?
My children, I think they love that they've got an incredibly sporty mom. It doesn't seem to be rubbing off, I'd say. Just they have the ability physically. I'm not sure mentally they have the same sort of drive to pursue competitive sports in quite to the same level yet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're like, oh, that was the olden days, mom. That was when you, when you were cool, you're not so cool anymore.
No, this is our time, mom.
This is our time. Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah. I'm just mom. I'm absolutely just mom.
And actually related to that, are the competitive juices still there? What about the mum's race at sports day? It must be so... It must be soul-destroying for the other competitive parents to turn up and realise they're lining up against Denise Lewis.
I just don't get involved. I just don't. I did it once and I thought that was enough. So you'll find me at the back, you know, cap on, glasses on, whether it's sunshine or not, and I'm just watching from a distance. You know, it's been actually, we're joking aside, it has been a challenge for my children. I've got a 19-year-old daughter and she's had... I think a torrid time with that comparison, you know, that expectation of, you know, being that sporty, naturally gifted athlete. Mm. And she just wasn't, you know, completely different body shape, wanting to be competitive, but not really. And, you know, I think it actually suffocated her at some stages of her early life, that she just was getting tired of, oh, you must be sporty.
Yeah.
Questions. Very hard for her.
Mm-hmm.
The boys are a little bit more removed because, you know, they do different sports. They do team sports. They're both into that sort of football and rugby, cricket. They've done all of it. And they just get tired a little bit of, again, that expectations. I mean, my son tells me a funny story, or told me a funny story when he moved schools a few years ago. And literally day two at his new school, he was summoned to the playing field to race the fastest boy in the year. That was his initiation.
Oh.
Luckily, he beat him, but, you know, that was his sort of trial. Like, let's see what you've got.
Oof, that's pressure right there.
Not pressure, a lot of pressure.
He delivered.
And I do think they feel the pressure come sports day. I do. Mm. So I always encourage them just to do their best, and that's all they can do, yeah, ultimately. But they've always got that target on their back.
Yes, that's all we ask of ourselves, isn't it? Just trying our best. And as a parent, I'm sure you're always trying to communicate that as a message and nothing else.
I have to, because it wasn't my message. You know, sports day was me. Like, I want everyone to see that I'm actually the fastest girl here, and that's it. So I'm uber competitive, but my children don't seem to have that. So you've got to, and we talk about this adjusting of mindset. I've had to really check back and try not to be that pushy parent.
Mm.
I think one of my children is particularly gifted, but he's the Iceman. His nickname is the Iceman because he's so cool and laid back. And, you know, he just isn't interested. He likes to play on his terms, and I've had to adjust. And it started with my daughter, because she asked me what's wrong with being mediocre one day. And I nearly fell off my chair. I was like, what? What did she say to me? I was like, what's wrong with being mediocre? I was like, whoa, okay. let me come back to you on that one. People, you just can't assume just because you've given birth to your children that you've got them. You know, it's not an identikit. You know, they're not carbon copies of you. Mm. And so I've had to let them be and organically find their way as they still develop. Mm.
And celebrate those differences. You know, that we're not carbon copies of each other. Your youngest, I know you've been very open talking about that, becoming a mum again at 46. Let's talk about that. How did you feel physically any different, clearly, from having children in your 30s? And how are you enjoying that?
I'm smiling because I absolutely love being a mum again, fourth time, and I feel fitter than ever. I really do. And I was really determined when I found out I was pregnant after I got over the shock that it wasn't, you know, perimenopause. I was actually really pregnant. I was like, okay, so I'm really doing this. And little conversation with myself, as I often do. Right body, right mind. Let's get to work. You know, you're 46, the body is changing. I don't actually know whether I'm going to be able to do, this is the conversation, I'm role-playing here with myself. This is the conversation I had. I don't know whether my body's going to be able to do what it did sort of 10 years ago, but we're going to give it a good crack. And that means you've got to have a sensible exercise program. Nothing too strenuous, but consistently working out. Mostly functional training. I wasn't confident enough to run this time, so I didn't do any running. I went on the bike a little bit. I was on the running machine, but walking and using TheraBands, those exercise bands, and just being really sensible, but keep making sure that functionally I was going to give it my all. And sort of postpartum, I was very much of the mindset, you will not be tired, it's going to be challenging, but you will overcome it, you'll eat right, you'll sleep right. And I don't mind sharing this with you, Mario, but I said to my husband, I know you don't want to be tired again because you really are not equipped to deal with all of this time around, because he was well over 50. And I said, how about you move into the spare room and let just me and baby Troy just do this? We've got it. And that's what I did. And it worked a treat. What was the use of both of us being tired?
So he got a full night's sleep. How selfless of you. I bet you remind him of that from time to time.
No, but I said, what I expect from you is that when he turned to chef, he was making sure that I was nutritionally sound. So I was getting my food on demand. He was like my own Deliveroo, personal delivery to the bedroom. And he looked after me while I looked after baby. It's perfect.
That's fantastic. There we are. You're inspiring parents to be out there. That's the plan.
It's a plan, but you can do that full time round when you, yeah, because with our number three, he was up all night because he didn't actually leave the bed until he was about five. So it was, that was torture. That was real hell on earth, sleep deprivation to the maximum. Yeah. But this time around, I just felt I wanted to do it this way, and it worked. It worked for us.
And do you feel you're cherishing and enjoying Troy more at the age that you both are as parents now? It's almost a privilege to have children later in life.
It's a privilege, but it's, you know, you're not trying to... I think during the 30s, we were moving house, we were rushing around with the children, there were toddlers. It was chaotic, you know, you're still forging your career. Everything was just, you always were wishing you were at the next phase of life and busy, just crazy busy. This time, I feel like I'm in control. I have really good balance. As I said, I'm energized. I know what I want. I wanted Troy with my whole heart, and I'm just loving it. He brings me so much joy every day. Yes, we had lockdown, so that really did help us as well. You know, you could have all the milestones. I saw every minute without having to feel guilty about going off to work and leaving him. It was a blessing. It was a real blessing. So it's turning that negative into a positive for me. That was a big key. And I'll be sad when he is at nursery full time. I will really miss our quality time together.
But the positivity that just emanates from you, that's its own inspiration, Denise. And what does your exercise regime look like these days? What's a typical week for you? What do you like to do? Because in the end, we tend to do what we enjoy. So what do you enjoy?
I enjoy high intensity training. I do love it. I like to sweat. I love it. I like to cycle as well. Cycling for me is a big one. And that's, you know, indoor and out. I have some really cool road bikes, but I'm not too confident at this time of the year when it's a bit cold and the leaves are everywhere to go out. But I enjoy cycling. I do a lot of functional training as well. So, you know, making sure I've got good glute activation, keeping my upper body intact. You know, women have, you know, you probably know when you're married, hot spots. I call them hot spots that you like to work on. And so I pay a lot of attention to those hot spots. But I the one area that I'm not good at is my stretching, my flexibility. That is something that I really, as an athlete, I didn't like it either. But it's a vital component of fitness. And both my husband and I realized we need to do a bit more stretching and work on our flexibility. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I'm in good order. I don't do as much sort of weight training as I used to. That's intentional, but I do, you know, like bell work, but again, it's more functional movement as opposed to really trying to go into, I call it beast mode, with the heavy squats and whatnot. You can still get the same sort of resistance and muscle activation with lighter weights, different reps, and making sure you vary your training.
Well, there's a job here for you as a personal trainer, Denise. You know your stuff. And have you ever gone back onto the track? Have you? When were you last on a track and put the spikes on?
Oh, spikes, that's an absolute no-no. I remember training with my sons because, again, trying to keep the boys really engaged during lockdown was tough. And so I consciously came up with plans. We were very engaged at the garden, so we were very lucky. We could do some, you know, cone work on their footy and reactions. So we did a lot of that. But we also went running a lot. And, you know, you just don't train with your teens because they get too good.
Yes.
They get too good and they will embarrass you even though you're not ready for that victory, you know, for their victories. But I trained with my son and he, he whooped my ass. I was most upset. And I pulled my hamstring because I was determined that he didn't beat me. I pulled my hamstring, Marianne, and I thought, wow, that's a sign that you need to take out the competitiveness. You're helping him, not yourself. Just so coach on the side.
Bad enough you were whooped by your son and then also pulled your hamstring.
Yes.
Oh, that's a satisfying moment for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, very much so.
And next year's a big year for Birmingham.
Yes.
Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
And I think you're involved in some capacity as a figurehead for the Games. Is that right? Tell us about that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I'm president of Commonwealth Games England.
Small role.
But I love it. You know, I can't begin to tell you that in my sort of two terms that Birmingham were awarded the Commonwealth Games. It's going to be amazing. Naturally, after the year we've had, or the athletes have had after in Tokyo, where there were no crowds, the protocols that were in place really challenging for them, you know, with the COVID, the isolation. We won't have, fingers crossed, we won't have that next year. We're hoping to have full stadia. And the athletes have an opportunity to share those once-in-a-lifetime moments with friends and family on home soil.
Mm.
Yeah, we haven't had a major games like that since the Olympics.
And actually, just thinking about Tokyo just passed, this is a perfect opportunity for someone like Dina Asher-Smith, who unfortunately injury curtailed her Olympics, to bounce back in a home games as a springboard for her future.
There'll be a lot of athletes in similar situations. I mean, Katarina Johnson-Thompson, who obviously is world champion in heptathlon, a British record holder as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she had a torrid time also this year.
Yeah.
Just about made it onto the start line. And then we saw her sadly pull up in the 200 metres at the close of day one. So she's hoping also that the Commonwealth will give her another opportunity to wow the crowds. But we have a lot of youngsters coming through. Keely Hodgkinson in the women's 800 meters, you saw her stunning silver medal out in Tokyo. But again, when you win a medal like that, you want to back it up. You know, athletes are in the collecting as many medals if you have the opportunity as possible. So she'll want to be there. Her parents couldn't be in Tokyo seeing her moment in the sun, you know, that glorious race that she put together. So again, having the opportunity to witness something like that will be amazing. And there'll be a lot of those stories throughout the sports where people just shine, young athletes getting that opportunity that I remember so well, walking into your first global championships. But this time it'll be with a home crowd there behind you. Just amazing.
That's exciting. And injuries permitting, women's athletics is in pretty good shape, right? When you look at who's coming through and who's already there in world terms, it's actually exciting times for the women's athletics, would you say?
It's not just women's athletics either. It's women's sport in general. It's it's on the ascendancy. It's really taking shape. And that comes through, you know, enough people and some of the early pioneers just demanding more visibility, more sponsorship deals coming into play. And I think that has really not only galvanized some of the teams, team sports, but also really sort of encouraged more girls to want to take up women's sport. And so next year we'll see a lot of women's sport showcased at the Commonwealth Games and a lot of new names for people to get used to. And so, yes, both the greater world of women's sport, but equally track and field athletics will really have our women, I think, possibly scooping a lot of the medals.
You're right. There are more opportunities for women in sport generally. And you strike me as too modest, but I wonder if you look back with some degree of satisfaction, you helped contribute in opening doors for women to participate in sport.
I think it's unlocking that, can I do it? Have I got what it takes to get there? And I think if you watch my, how did you describe it in the beginning? It wasn't an easy ride to that gold medal at all. You know, the injuries ravished my body, but I made it. And I think that's triumph over adversity for a lot of people was very inspirational. And I think that alone for many of our women, just like, yeah, we see much more success. Yes, I might have been one of the early athletes to really plant that seed consistently throughout my career that have inspired them. And they're just running with that baton. They are running towards the light and they are doing so well. And it's a joy to watch from my little comms box and my comfy sofa watching them slug it out.
Do you mentor them, Denise? Do they come to you for advice? I'd like to think they do, but what sort of relationship do you have with today's stars?
I think I've said to myself many years ago, that it's my responsibility to reach out, because as athletes, you sort of just get on with it and you sometimes struggle in silence. So, and it's quite well documented, my relationship with Kat is a really strong one. So when I saw that she needed help, I actively reached out to her. And I think that's like anything with your mental wellness. The onus is always on, you know, down to someone to say, help, I need help. And that's not an easy thing to do for a lot of people. And so it is about picking up the phone and saying, how's everything going? And so I do that with a couple of athletes. I do pick up the phone or go on their socials and DM them and just say, hey, everything okay? You know, whether it's athletes that have just had babies that are, oh, goodness, I beg your pardon, did that come through?
No.
Okay, so I had a loud ringing noise in my head. No. Sorry about that. But even if that's athletes that have just had a baby, one athlete in particular, I just reached out to her very recently and said, I know what it's like when you're still in that athlete's mindset. You just want to get back as soon as possible. But you have to respect the body, respect that it is a trauma to the body, going through pregnancy, having birth, childbirth. You know, it's traumatic for the body. And so take your time, do the right things, make sure you get your pelvic floor sorted before you start pounding the track or the roads again. You know, just make sure that your body is right before you get going.
Such good advice, and I'm sure really appreciated from everyone you reach out to. What project, other than the Commonwealth Games next year, any projects coming up, Denise, that you're looking forward to?
Oh, now you put me on the spot. I'm involved with a campaign at the moment, and it's one with a high street brand. And again, I love this real energy there is about women being open and talking and sharing how difficult it is sometimes to be a woman. And I'm not trying to alienate our male listeners here, but for too long, we're quiet about things that are relevant to us. And I'm involved in some new products, just training, apparel. But it's, you know, the motto is the gym of life, and women are always juggling and hustling, and oh, it's the schoolroom, work, you name it. So I'm involved in just creating sort of apparel for women to feel comfortable in, so they can just go about their daily lives. So, yeah, always open to opportunities, Mario. That's me. Got my ear to the ground.
Right.
Well, okay. Well, after this podcast, there's a part-time personal trainer contract on its way to you, okay? So you can train our members here. We can negotiate the hourly rate, okay, after this podcast. But it's been wonderful talking to you. You are such an inspiration. You exude all this positivity. You clearly haven't slowed down. Everything you turn to hand to, you seem to just really throw everything at it. And thank you for sharing your life today with all of us. Here at Lanzerhof at the Arts Club. And well, hopefully we'll see you here very soon.
Definitely. And thank you for having me. Thanks, Mario.
Well, thanks very much. And well, we'll speak again very soon, Denise.
Thank you. Keep well.
And you. Bye.